Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. We always end the show with what a beautiful day it is. The whole Verde Valley today, though, is filled with smoke. You can't see the Black Hills or Black Range across from us. 19 firefighters, all 18 of them from the Granite Mountain Hotshots were killed yesterday. It's the largest toll, I think, of firefighters in Arizona's history. It's the largest number of firefighters killed in 30 or 40 years nationwide.
Well, certainly the largest number since 9/11. I'm going to recommend going to the Facebook page. Somebody set up a Facebook page, and it's going up 1,000 people every minute or so. Last time I checked it, it was 112,000 people had friended. And then they have a picture of the hotshot crew there. I remember when I worked for the Forest Service here in Sedona, I worked with hotshot crews on a fire up at Willard Springs, as a matter of fact. So, I mean, a lot of people have certainly a close connection. All of Sedona feels like they have a close connection after the Bryn Fire with these incredible guys that do this. And this is a huge tragedy beyond our description, certainly, to
And for
about.
The size of the community, it's a terrible blow. I was standing about five blocks from the World Trade Center on 9/11. And I saw all the firemen and the ambulances go by me heading for the buildings. And then I saw the buildings come down on them. A traumatic experience, I think. In New York is a huge place compared to Prescott. But almost everybody knew a firefighter who was either killed or miraculously wasn't killed in the blast. And the whole town filled with shrines. So it is a terrible day for the guys who go out there and try to protect us for firefight.
The AP is saying they had to deploy their blankets and they just weren't good enough. You know, the fire just came over the top of them. And this is all on the Facebook page and a lot of other sources.
There's an incredible video of the fire that was taken from some miles away that showed the thunderstorm that was, you know, hanging over the area at the time of the fire. And this was a very small fire that, you know, had not yet grown. And you can watch over the time lapse of the video this incredible downdraft at the end of the storm that just caused the fire to explode. So that's what they got caught in, apparently.
A lot of these tragedies happen in unexpected places. I mean, when we watched the buildings were burning on 9/11, I don't think anybody could see that the buildings would crash in on the firefighters. We thought the firefighters were going to go and save the day. We didn't know hundreds of them would be killed. So what are we talking about today? I think because we live in northern Arizona, because we live in Arizona, we have a duty to take on Republican, what did you call them, Gary? T-Publican lies and myths. And
we want to call them lots of things.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. So the Republicans.
On the air.
So the Republicans, looking back to what they did to Clinton when he was in office, and they had a summer of scandals, and all the scandals were basically phony.
Right.
There was the blonde hair found on somebody's body. There was white water, which ended up spending millions and millions of dollars and produced nothing, and so forth and so on.
There was the Vin Foster Travelgate.
Sleeping over in the White House.
We want to. And today's fake scandal is.
And today's fake. So. Now, before we say what today's fake scandal is, the Republicans have another summer of scandals they're trying to work on, and we picked one today, Mike, and we picked...
Well, the fake scandal of the IRS, the fake IRS scandal is our topic today, targeting of conservative groups by the IRS is just about been exposed as complete fabrication by this time.
Yes. And so but probably what happens is all the headline, and this was a scandal that not only was from the right, but that the the standard moderate press jumped on. I remember how they treated Jimmy Carter like he was Richard Nixon back when he was elected. Yeah. They had no stuff. You know, the truth about Barack Obama is he's a straight arrow. And the truth is also that what happened, this is not the 1960s, you know, and what happened back during the Nixon administration pretty much couldn't happen today.
But this works so well. It's such an effective technique. And you know what it's like. The headlines are on page one, and the explanations are on page 15, in the C section of the paper. But nonetheless, with you guys, we are going to expose, at least discuss ISA, Daryl ISA, and the lies and the fake scandal regarding the IRS.
Well, have you heard, folks, that Douglas Schuman, who was the head of the IRS, was a Bush appointee, that there was a Bush appointee in charge of the IRS during this whole scandal?
The real key to the technique, I think, is that if you make a sensational claim, and ISA is, this is what, the fifth one of Daryl ISA's
committee? Yeah, we'll take on some of his other scandals.
And if you make this outrageous claim, and based on a little bit of evidence, then you get all of the media to report it, it becomes sensational headlines. And then when you delve into it and you find that there's really nothing there or not much there or what is there is not political, then the actual information never gets reported in the same way. So if you can keep coming up with scandal after scandal, you keep, the administration on its heels, and they never have a chance to bring up any of the other issues that or at least get much traction with the other issues that they want to cover.
So the IRS and the IRS Inspector General are both Republicans.
Correct.
Republican appointees and Republicans. Stephen Miller, who replaces the guy, is a 24-year veteran of the IRS. He's not a political guy, and he's got to be one of the most inept political people on the scene. What he does, you can tell folks what he does, Gary, he has a question planted at a news conference because he knows that the Inspector General's report is going to come out and say that the conservative groups were unfairly subject to examination.
And let's mention that this was the big thing in this accusation, the big thing in this investigation, that it was directed from the White House, not just that the IRS was targeting conservative groups, but ISA insists it was coming from the White House.
Well, isn't it what nobody is saying is that objectively doing a search for Tea Party groups, if you want to examine political groups applying for nonprofit status, is objectively a good search term. Politically, it is absolutely deadly if you don't absolutely balance these things politically.
Politically, yes, and I'm good with that. And Gary's got all the info on this, and I don't want to mess up his what he's going to say. But personally, let's see, you have a group that is an avowed anti-tax organization, and you have an agency whose job it is to collect and do things with taxes. As far as I'm concerned, the Tea Party was a natural organization to be targeted by somebody I'm paying to investigate tax cheats.
All right. Then one thing before we go to Gary's is this, and this is not clear, I think, in any of the media. No one has to apply for 10C4 tax-exempt status. It doesn't affect your organization. All you have to do is declare your organization as that. And Gary has a great example.
Stephen Colbert created a super PAC, which was a 501C4. And he used as his attorney, I forget the guy's name, but he was a former head of the Federal Elections Commission. And he's a Republican. And so he had, his Trevor Potter is the guy's name. And so Trevor filled out all of the paperwork on one of Colbert's shows and created this, so-called super PAC. And Colbert collected hundreds of thousands of dollars that he used for comedic reasons during the 2012 campaign. And so he had him on, Potter back on recently after the scandal broke. and asked him if he had sent in the application, and Potter said no, there's no need to, and so now they're sending in the application, and they've changed the name of the Super PAC from a Better Tomorrow Tomorrow to it's about 30 words using Tea Party conservative. Don't you dare reject this application is the name of the group, and so Potter is sending it in. So it was never necessary to send in a application for a 501c4.
Sending in an application, and no, none of the Tea Party applications have been turned down. The only application they ever turned down was from a liberal group, right?
Correct. And some of the criteria, Mike mentioned that Tea Party was one of the search terms for these be on the lookout memos, was you had Tea Party, you had conservative, you had various terms that dealt with anti-government, anti-Obamacare, et cetera, but you also had blue and progressive and Democrat and a number of liberal terms. So it wasn't isolated just to conservative groups. The conservative groups got probably a little more scrutiny, but
well, there were a lot more of them. This was at the absolute height of applying for
it was right
401c4. So the thing is, folks, you don't have to apply. The reason you apply is the IRS may come along in 20 years and say, you're really not a tax exempt organization, so you have to tell us who your donors are. And what we have is a vast number of highly politicized organizations spending about $300 million and pretending that they're being social welfare organization. So it's possible if you don't get IRS approval that the IRS will come around someday and say you have to pay taxes on your donations and you have to tell us who actually gave you the money. That's what's really going on. It does not interfere with your organization. Every one of these organizations could go on as if nothing happened and wait for their thing. It does make contributors more secure if you have an IRS approval for your designation. But it's not tax deductible anyway. You're not a charity. It's not tax deductible. So it really doesn't matter. So all the stuff you hear about, oh, the damage done to Tea Party and how it allowed Obama to win, it's just all bull.
And I'd like to say that as part of a Democratic organization, I filled out a lot of this paperwork for because of IRS scrutiny over our nonprofit status. So it's and that's again a Democratic organization. So this is nothing that's really, you know, completely confined to conservatives. But let's start out by doing a definition of the 501c3 and the 501c4. These are the two, you know, primary nonprofit statuses. The 501c3 is a nonprofit for religious, charitable, or educational purposes, and these are the groups that are the donations to these groups are tax deductible. They've been around for years and years and years. Lots of religious organizations.
The NORAD poets, the senior center. There are a lot of things around here.
If you donate to Goodwill, it's a 501c3.
In other words, if you're donating, you don't even have to know about this. The charity has already applied for the status. It has the status. And so if there's any questions about your donation, it's pretty much settled, right?
Yes, and it's...
And that's a 501c3. Tell us about 501c4s, which is where all the action is.
And this, you know, I should point out that in both groups or both organizations, donors are kept anonymous. And that's for obvious reasons. If somebody gives a multi-million-dollar donation to a group, they don't want that publicized because every other group will come seeking their donations. So that was one of the reasons for the for the secrecy. But a 501c4, these are the organization's applications that exploded after the Citizens United Supreme Court decision, which allowed groups to get more involved in politics on a free on a First Amendment basis. And a 501c4 is a social welfare organization, is how they define it. It can do more than a C3 in terms of advocacy, but the donations are not tax deductible. And they can get involved in some political activities, but it has to be more as an education, and it has to be primarily non-political. So initially,
that slipped a lot.
When this designation began, it had to be exclusively for the public good. Now it's been changed over the years to primarily for the public good. So it's a very ambiguous term, and it's very difficult to decide, you know, what is primary.
Okay, so the IRS Exempt Organizations Division, which is the watchdog, is looking over 1.5 million nonprofits. Right? It's a huge number of nonprofits.
Wow.
They cut the size of the IRS, starting in 1998, they cut it from about 100,000 to, in 2012, to 90,000. The Cincinnati office that becomes the problem place. Why is it in Cincinnati? Anyone ever ask why is it in Cincinnati? It's in Cincinnati because the pay scale for the kind of people, the kind of introductory people that the IRS is looking for, is too low to attract people in large eastern cities. Like, so they moved it to a conservative Republican town in Ohio, beautiful place, Cincinnati, and they set up the whole division there, where it's completely, or apparently what happened, and right, in Gary, is that it got really isolated from the rest of the IRS. They're sitting there, they're specializing, they've got the average employee in Cincinnati was responsible for going through one application a day, approving or disproving one application a day. So you've got a bunch of overworked people in the area who just politically have no idea what things mean. They seem to have no political sense at all, and so they're looking at it just from this kind of blinkers on of purely professional things. Now, how we got all these applications and how can we find the ones who are really political organizations in disguise? And they come up with these terms. And even if they're Republican, that doesn't matter to them because they're coming up with terms that's going to bring hits on organizations so they can select some guys out for a special thing. But guess how this looks nationally, folks?
Yeah, it does look real bad politically. And like you said, these were not, and they were people doing their job, not people worried about what you want. You don't want them to worry about the politics. You want them to go for it. And then as time went by through this particular scandal, we found that they used progressive search terms also because of the nature of the beast. Either side they could see would be doing more political activities than they maybe should have been. So they were worthy of investigation.
They put out 15 beyond the watch.
Bolos.
And for progressive organizations as well as for conservative ones. The inspector general, so the Congress said, like, well, why didn't you tell us you were investigating progressives? And the inspector general, who again is a Republican, says, well, they're not the same thing because there was no action taken on our investigation. And he said, the listing of progressive organizations was historical.
Right. Yeah, this isn't really isolated to just conservatives, but that's what makes good headlines. So, if you go back to how it really got, this whole thing got started, this one guy in Cincinnati, a guy or woman, we don't really know for sure at this point, was assigned to checking these out and came up with, to make his or her job easier, came up with some terms that would be easy to put into a search engine and, you know, kick out organizations that met this criteria. So he used Tea Party and Blue and Progressive and Conservative, et cetera, et cetera. He wasn't sure if that was really a good thing to do, so he went to his supervisor. And his supervisor said, well, as long as it's, apparently said, as long as it's equal, no problem. But then they went seeking, it did get to Washington, apparently. They went seeking approval from somebody in Washington, D.C., in the IRS, not in the administration. And it's still unclear what happened as a result of that.
It's always unclear in these situations where our higher-ups actually understand what's being asked them. They've got a huge workload. And I think in most of these scandals and stuff, it's very much harder to tell what the response is you might think. So anyway, they asked this guy, and they said, who are you and what are you? He said, well, I'm a conservative Republican. He said, and I came up with this stuff. And that threw the committee in a bit of a dizzy, and they decided to release just sections of the testimony where things like this didn't get released, right,
yes.
Gary?
ISA, rather than release all of the testimony or both sides of the testimony, cherry-picked some testimony that made the situation look even worse than it is. And the senior Democrat on the committee, Elijah Cummings, said, went to ICE and said, either release the full documents or I will, of the testimony. And ISA refused and had all sorts of lame excuses. So Cummings decided that if ISA could selectively release information, he would do the same thing. So what he released, transcripts of testimony by an IRS manager in Cincinnati, who said he elevated the first Tea Party case that led the agency to begin singling out conservative groups. And he self-described himself as a conservative Republican. So this is not a political issue.
They think they're being professional, looking for organizations that shouldn't have 501c4 status, who are using the status to hide their donors. And you'll notice, folks, that they go after these small, or they bring all these small Tea Party groups in review. They don't go after any of the big groups spending hundreds of millions of dollars on campaign using the same status. And it's what, $300 million, almost entirely Republican money, almost entirely disguised as who the donors were, went into the campaign from 501c4s.
But yeah, and that's the real scandal, is that they're not going after the big groups.
Yeah.
But what Gary said, that Elijah Cummings releases the transcripts. So, okay, let me release these. And I went and read the transcripts. And sure enough, if you, as ISA asks questions, there's some damning stuff in there, just like in any, I think, cross-examination when, you're asking the questions, you're getting answers that don't sound so good. But ISA couldn't leave that alone. I mean, he had to use all sorts of, calling the head of the IRS in Cincinnati, Obama's best friend, and taking his marching orders from Washington, and all of this inflammatory and untrue language, when quite frankly, listening, even just reading the transcripts, the way the questions were asked, there's a little smoke there. There's some guy, but as we pointed out for the last 20 minutes, these are guys doing their job.
If they put you on the spot and accuse you of a lot of stuff, I'm afraid the tendency of human beings, you're before a committee, is to try to blame somebody else. Right. I mean, this is a human tendency. Well, no, somebody told me to do this, and I don't. Taking actual responsibility for having come up with this very lame idea is
well, so where did you get your orders? I got more orders from my boss. Well, where's your boss? My boss is in Washington. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. But
And the fact is, I'm not even sure it was a lame idea to do these search terms. It was simply a matter of efficiency. It looks bad, but if you're not concerned about the politics, as you pointed out, It's only a natural thing to do. If you were researching, you know, 501c4s yourself, and you were charged to find out if they were overly political and if they were they're meeting the criteria that they claimed on their applications, you would probably use something similar to get to.
But you can't focus on conservative groups and not have equal focus on progressive and democratic groups, even if they're very, very huge differences in terms of the number of groups. Even if you've got 10 times Tea Party groups times progressive groups, you have to search for both. It's politically really dead-eared to use terms like this because of look at the way it looks.
Yeah, but again, if you're doing your job and you're not involved in politics, I think you would probably pretty much anybody would get to the same thing. And here's I'd like to give a couple of examples of groups that were had their activities delayed. One was the Ohio Liberty Coalition, whose application was delayed for more than 2 years and claimed that they weren't involved in political activities, yet many of their emails were to their members were very political, asking people to vote for Mitt Romney and sending people to Romney events.
So one thing, Gary, I mean, even though their status hasn't been approved, they're still active. They're still doing what they do. And in fact, even though their application is pending, they're not afraid to go out and do all kinds of political stuff in violation of the status. They're not worried about actually being. Remember, folks, no group was denied, as far as I know.
No conservative group were denied. One liberal group was.
One liberal group, no conservative group were denied. It's a very different picture than what you get in the scandal headlines. Go ahead, Gary.
And another group that had their application approval delayed was the Coalition for Life of Iowa, which is a pro-life group that was simply asked to explain how all of their activities, including their prayer meetings held outside of Planned Parenthood facilities, were considered educational. So you get into this kind of gray area where, you know, is that educational? I mean, to me, it's obviously not, but they're calling it educational. And I should also point out that some of the groups that had their applications delayed were media organizations, nonprofit media organizations that were legitimately non-political except for reporting on politics, but they had theirs denied as well.
Well,
when we put
our application in for Democratic Perspective, I expect it to sail right through unless they want Steve to submit to a strip search. I've already offered them, Steve.
Thank you. I noticed some of our old friends have the status, huge groups like the, and I have a list here in front of me, like the 60-plus Association. Remember Mike and I talking about that a couple of years ago? These are phony senior groups. They spent 74% of their money on political advertising. Do we have any events, Mike, in the Verde Valley?
We want to talk about, first of all, our wonderful helpers, Democrats of the Verde Valley and Democrats of the Red Rocks. If you are looking to get involved in this sort of thing, folks, we have local organizations right here that can help you out with that stuff. Yeah, you know, I think we're going to do genetically modified food next week. We're going to do genetically modified organizations. So what we're doing maybe on the show next week. But you asked about events with July
13th.
We have the Arizona Democratic Party is having its quarterly meeting right there in
rural Arizona. We finally got them up here, I guess.
Mingus Union High School. They have the caucus meetings in the morning and the general meeting in the afternoon. That's July
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock, July 13th. That's a Saturday.
And you're doing a fundraiser the night before.
We're doing a fundraiser the night before at the home of Jim Ledbetter.
Are you going to be flipping hamburgers as usual?
No, I believe we're doing a Mexican theme, if that's important. Am I going to be flipping hamburgers? You know.
Viva La Verde.
Yeah. Viva La Verde. We are showing the movie. That's a big deal. Gary Beverly's movie.
So check
Viva
on the Door website, folks, and you'll see a poster about the event. It looks like it's a lot of fun. They're going to show a movie. They have a bunch of interesting folks going there. So that's the big event coming up.
We do have some left-wing activities going on here in the Verde Valley, and we don't, you know, we'll talk about more later.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.